Welcome back. It's been only a few short weeks since Marjorie Van Deven took over as Missouri's Commissioner of Education from Chris Nicastro. Leadership changed, but major problems facing public education in Missouri in general, and in our area in particular, remained. Commissioner Van Deven sat down this week with St. Louis Public Radio reporters Dale Singer and Tim Lloyd. In this edited version of a nearly hour-long interview, Dale first asked Van Deven about MSIP 5. That's the fifth version of the Missouri School Improvement Plan. It's the way the state holds schools accountable for review and accreditation. Dale asked whether it's fair to assess North St. Louis County schools, such as the Normandy School District, which a judge has ruled as unaccredited, in the same way that other schools throughout the state are judged.
When we move and look at MSIP 5 from where we were with previous versions of MSIP, we heard quite a bit about some of the challenges that do take place across our state. We have a very, very diverse state. We have school districts with 23 students. We have school districts with 23,000 students. Our free and reduced priced lunch percentage rates have reached the 50% threshold this year, and that's the metric that we use to talk about poverty levels, even though some would argue that that's not the best to talk about generational poverty and so forth. But when we're talking about 50% of our children on free and reduced priced lunch currently, that we have 1 in 8 students that currently have an individual education plan in place, an IEP, when we have there's a vast amount of needs across the state. So we went from MSIP 4, the fourth cycle of MSIP, to MSIP 5 to talk about how do we take those kinds of things into account. So we did add a growth model for the first time, and the growth model is one measure that there is no correlation between those other indicators that I've just mentioned and results. We do look at progress measures. We do look at status measures. We look at kids coming to school and their attendance. We look at college and career readiness, and we've added, previously we just looked at ACT. MSIP 5 looks at a whole array of college and career readiness indicators. So we have ACT, SAT, technical skills attainment, so we can look at career readiness. We look at the military. We look at any kind of placement that that child might find outside of high school. So we've added a lot of ways of reaching a much more diverse population in the scoring system. But when we're looking at outcomes for kids, yes, I think we really have to hold to that same expectation for all kids, that all kids deserve the opportunity to graduate college and career ready, that all kids must reach that finish line at some point, and we have to hold our school districts accountable for making sure that happens. Now, do some of our school districts, like you just described, have additional needs? Absolutely. And so how do we identify what those needs are and provide the support so that they can help their children meet the same expectations that other kids across the state are meeting?
Yeah, and one of the big changes that's happening this year is moving the state assessments online. And they're going to be all digital. And when I talk to educators, there's a lot of concern about that move. Many say that their schools aren't necessarily ready to make that switch. They look for things like extra mice for their computers or having enough monitors. They're asking parents to find, to donate spare monitors and keyboards. Are you satisfied that districts are prepared to make this switch and that it'll be fair across districts with different levels of resources?
I think most districts, actually we're running a test right now for the last couple of weeks. We've been running a test across the state to see where districts are. We've been getting minimal reports that they're having. Certainly there have been a couple of obstacles, but minimal. And people are feeling as if they are ready to move forward with that. I'm personally excited about the opportunity to move from a paper pencil to the online version, just because I think our kids are much more equipped to work with the computer systems than they are paper and pencil even right now. Some of the feedback that we've gotten from children we've spoken with is that it's awesome. They like the ability to drag and click and to listen. The questions are, some of them they're using audiovisual capabilities that provide the questions in a different format than they would typically see. It allows them to bookmark and go back and check where they were before and flag questions that they're having trouble with and go back and answer them later. Will there be hurdles in getting everything launched perfectly the first time administered? Absolutely. Do we expect that to happen? Sure. We are working around the clock to help our districts to make sure that doesn't happen, and are hoping for the best and smoothest transition possible.
But given all of that, I mean, there is still this lingering digital divide between wealthier districts and districts with fewer dollars. You know, is that feedback coming from districts that have more resources, or is it coming from districts that have lower incomes?
Well, again, if we're talking about all children having access to high-quality education, mm-hmm. I think today to say that children don't have access to a computer that works in front of them is almost inexcusable. We really have to work together to figure out how we're providing our districts and our students with the tools that they need to be successful. Children today, I believe we'd be doing a great disservice to them if we did not provide them with the technology skills they would need in order to be successful when they enter into a career. Just about every test I have taken in the last 5 years has been online. I don't believe I've taken a paper pencil test in the last 5 years in any capacity. So you sit down to take your driver's test today, you do that using the computer. I think we would be doing a great disservice if we weren't preparing them for those skills.
Is there too much emphasis put on test results? I mean, some people want teachers' salaries and even their jobs to be dependent on it. Some people want schools to be rated A through F, and a lot of that would be based on the test. And there's even a situation where, in terms of funding, I mean, you want the department's goal is for Missouri to be in the top 10 states education-wise by the year 2020, and I assume a lot of that would be based on how well test scores go up. Is it putting too much emphasis on tests?
Well, again, I think that really calls out the importance of using multiple indicators. In any of those situations you're describing, I would not think it would be wise to use any one test to make that decision on any of those areas that you just referenced.
How about using test results for teacher salaries or even teacher employment? Is that a good idea?
If you have a fair way of monitoring how the teachers as an additional indicator, that might work. One of the things that I think I find the most interesting about teachers is that they are very, very collaborative in nature. And so, you know, when we talk about doing performance pay, I tend to think, why not recognize the entire building for moving things forward? Let's not pit one group against another, but let's recognize the bus driver and the cooks and the front office staff and everybody that makes that climate. So one of the highest indicators of success or one of the highest inputs for success is high expectations for all kids. So how can we create that climate and culture that holds everyone accountable in that school for every kid? And I would be much more inclined to think that might be a very good idea, to recognize high performance and working together. And I think, I have no problem with thinking about some incentives, but how do we do that really promotes teaching and learning?
I want to talk a little bit about school equity. In the St. Louis region, you can hop on 170 and, depending on traffic, go between the boundaries of the Clayton School District and the Normandy Schools Collaborative in, we'll say, 10 minutes or so. But you're going between two drastically different worlds in terms of income and the kinds of students and the issues students are bringing through the doors. So the question becomes, when you look at 23 separate school districts within St. Louis County, can you really have equity and equal treatment for children in a region that's so divided in terms of how education is delivered?
I think if we can hold very fair to establishing the same high expectations for all children. Yes, I think you can walk in and see different schools that certain – you just described it earlier. If we have school districts that are out there searching for a computer for a child to take a test on, and we have others that have them, you know, kids carrying their own notebooks with them and being able to have it at their fingertips. We have two different situations. But at the end of the day, I think that's why it's really very important for the state to establish standards for high expectations for all kids and establish the expectation that all kids do have the opportunity to exit our K-12 systems with the same amount of skills. That's what we remain very focused on.
Let me follow up on Tim's question, because this is something I've wondered about for years. What do you think would happen if Normandy children and Clayton children changed buildings and for a semester or for a year, or they changed staffs? What would happen? Would both groups rise? Would one group get worse because of the situation? Would one group get better? How important is not necessarily what the kids bring, but what they find when they get to school?
Yeah, that's an excellent question, and one that we probably wouldn't get to play out, but it would be an interesting study to do. I think if you look at the research, you will see that school level effect is I don't remember the percentage right now, but it is about 18%. I mean, if you look at really the external factors have a much greater effect on student performance than when you have them in the schools. And so, but what we do know is what we make of the time that we do have them in school. There's research that will show, you know, one of the greatest school level effects is having an effective teacher in every classroom, that making sure that we do have high expectations for all kids, that we do have a rigorous curriculum in place, that we do have a community that is supporting them, that we do have learn. So all of those school level factors are really quite important. Again, I think your point is that it's the non-school factors that also play such a key role in how children perform in school. So that's where you hear much more conversation around the wraparound services. So if test scores point out that, yes, children of poverty across our state struggle on standardized test taking or do not do as well in school, what does that tell us? And then what do we do about that as a state? How do we identify what the appropriate supports are?
Governor Nixon has asked that the legislature commit in his proposed budget about $129 million toward the foundation formula. $79 million of that is attached to Medicaid expansion. Do you feel like that's a fair thing for the governor to ask the legislature to do? Lots of legislators on either side of the aisle have raised some concerns.
We are recognizing that there's about $50 million that has been taken forward right now in the recommendation, and we're in the middle of budget hearings right now. We're continuing to talk about the importance of funding the formula to the highest degree possible. We do believe that if the districts have the access to the funding that they need, that they will make really good choices with how they use that funding. So we are promoting funding that formula to the best of their ability.
So what do you take of that? But again, what do you make of that strategy attaching that $79 million to Medicaid expansion?
I think you'd have to talk to the governor about that.
I want to ask you about something that people have termed the Ferguson effect. And we've talked about it in terms of economics. We've talked about it in terms of crime. But I wonder if there's been a Ferguson effect in education, and in particular thinking about low-income children of color and what can be done to make sure that they receive the best possible education. Do you feel like the intensity has been ratcheted up post-Ferguson in that regard?
Yes. And I think, again, from the department, where how we look at that is the Ferguson situation it impacts our entire state. Mm-hmm. So what does it – and if we frame it all around, what does it mean for children of poverty? The part that I have the hardest time hearing is that sometimes children in these situations lack hope. And if they lack hope about tomorrow, it is really, really hard to engage them in learning today for something that they might use tomorrow. So I think – you know, again, that's something that one teacher can certainly help inspire. But the communities need to come together to really help our children see how important they are to the future of our state, of our country, and bringing that hope that they really have a purpose in this world and a purpose in life, and helping them find that and understand how important each child really is. That's what I think I would like to focus on.
St. Louis Public Education reporters Dale Singer and Tim Lloyd speaking with Missouri Education Commissioner Margie Van Deven. More on the interview will soon be posted on our website at stlpublicradio.org. Tomorrow on St. Louis on the Air, we'll take a look at how to determine fact from fiction in this digital age when misinformation is so pervasive. Then we'll get an update on the state of ALS research 6 months after the Ice Bucket Challenge went viral. Archived versions of past St. Louis On the Air programs are available for download or podcast at stlpublicradio.org. St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Thanks so much for listening. I'm Don Marsh.